Congratulations, boy.
Many gave their lives that we might stand here once again, united in the government of a lawful republic.
I am the great Cornholio!
Gaius Octavian, who is henceforth to be regarded, for all intents and purposes, as my lawful son.
Gaius Octavian. Caesar.
I love gold!
Welcome back to... The Life of Augustus Caesar, episode
69!
Yeah.
Ray's favorite number.
Yeah, it is.
How are you, Ray?
Doing okay. When we have a chance, I'd like to tell you a little story about the little emperor that never was. So sad, really.
Okay. Go.
Okay. All right. So this happens during when we meet someone in Australia. Because of the nature of the topic, I cannot disclose what city or the name of the person, obviously. But I was talking to a person who listens to our show, and he told me his wife was pregnant. And because I was just fooling around with him, I said, I know what the name of your child's going to be. It's going to be Augustus Cameron, whatever the fuck your last name is. He said, well, no, it's not going to be that. I actually did bring up Augustus to my wife, but she wouldn't go for it. And then he stops and he pauses and he gives me a look like he's really searching into my soul. And then he says, about a year and a half ago, she was pregnant and we lost the child. And I was like, dude, I'm so sorry. He goes, no, that's fine. Well, you know, we're over. She's pregnant now. She's due any day now. Everything's going to be fine. But she said to me, there's your Augustus.
Oh.
And that's how I was introduced to Australian humor.
Yeah, that was brutal. was your Augustus. Yeah, I remember that story. Yeah.
And I chugged the rest of my beer down as quickly as I could to try to feel something again because I wasn't sure how to react to that.
I'm not
going to
cry. I'm not going to cry.
So anyways, there's that little experience I had.
Yeah. God.
Don't fuck with women, guys. Do not fuck with Australian women. It's not worth it.
When you said you were going to tell a story, yeah. I thought you were going here.
Now this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. And I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel Air.
That's where my head went. Anyway, on our last episode, we were talking about all of the new morality laws that Augustus passed around about 18 BCE. Marriage law, get married, don't get married. There are penalties. Have three sons, you get bonuses. No adultery. If you are caught adulterizing, you get either banished to an island, or if you're a father, you get to kill your daughter who's adulterizing and their partner, the guy they're fucking. Or if you're a husband, you get to kill the guy that your wife is fucking and get to divorce your wife. So it was pretty, pretty, pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
Now, of course, remember, Julius Caesar had divorced one of his wives over the suggestion that she was fucking... Was it Milo? I think it was Milo.
No, I thought it was Poop. I don't think it was Milo. I think it was Publius. Or is it Publius Milo? I remember a P. We'll have to go back and look it up.
Yeah. Milo, it was Milo's mate, his enemy then. If it wasn't Milo, it was the other fucking dickhead. Yeah. Anyway, so, I mean, adultery had been a thing that you could get a divorce over anyway, but you couldn't just go around and kill the guy that she was fucking as a result.
Yeah.
And as you were saying towards the end of the last show, there was the, we talked in the last episode about how Augustus tried to make himself very approachable, a man of the people, on sort of friendly backslapping terms with the senators to a point. And as a result, the senators felt free to kind of embarrass Augustus without fear of reprisal. As we know from all of the episodes that we've done, vulgar abuse was fairly common in the Senate, mm-hmm. in letters. We know that they all, you know, Cicero and Mark Antony went at each other pretty hardcore. It was very common for people to go after you at a really, really deep personal level. And the senators continued to do this about Augustus at a milder level, but they felt relatively free just to take the piss out of him, basically, in the Senate, which seems a little bit surprising to me. With the amount of power that he had, you would think that they would be playing their cards pretty carefully. But no, and I think it kind of makes sense in a way that a way for them to feel better about how emasculated they were as an aristocracy. Sure. They got to fuck with him a little bit, and that and he was like, yeah, okay, get it out of your system. I have all the money and all the armies and all the power, so if it makes you feel better to make fun of me, just go for it. Like, I don't, that's a small price to pay for controlling everything.
Yeah. Well, and the other part of that is because he has worked so hard for stability, he has, to a large degree, not completely, but he has opened up all the positions, all the cursus honorum to these guys again. So again, even though it's semi-hollow, you can still say, oh, I was the consul in this year, or I was the praetor, or I was, you know, whatever. So they're able to go after things. But so part and parcel of returning to normalcy is, the new normalcy, is you get to pick on everybody because people said horrible things about the Julius Caesar. So they're going to give this guy a hard time to a degree. And they, I think they all kind of know where the line is, but they certainly come damn close to it. And again, the fact that only a few people probably had their careers ruined, not too many of them, just shows the maturity that this 45, 44-year-old has, and he's able to laugh at himself more than he ever could. And that, obviously that has to do with time and age. But again, they are going after him. There are a lot of uncomfortable moments in the Senate, and you have to remember the senatorial class, even though there's 600 senators, this is a very small group within the much larger city of Rome. And so these guys know each other very well. And so they're sticking it into him pretty well. But again, it's to a degree. And they get, like you said, they get what they want. He gets to seem like he's approachable and you can pick on him and it's okay. So it kind of serves everybody's best interest.
He's good old Augustus, just one of the good old boys.
That's right. Fucking my wife.
No, because there are adultery laws now. Can't do that. There's adultery laws.
He's gonna have to throw out some pardons because Romans are Romans and they like to fuck.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, anywho, we talked in the last episode about these marriage laws where there were penalties if you weren't married. Well, you got to hand it to the Romans. They figured out a way to get around this. What a lot of them started doing was marrying babies. Well,
hey baby, you want to get married? Yes, you do. Oh, yes, you do. And then they're betrothed.
Betrothing. You're getting betrothed to infants. So they weren't technically married, but they wouldn't have to worry about it for 18 years. They were engaged effectively to babies. And we know this was a relatively common practice. We know that Tiberius and Drusus had been betrothed to their brides when they were all babies.
Mm-hmm.
But I did that thing again. Sorry, Martin. I did a Martin. I'm going to call it a darling. I did a Darlington with my...
I did a Darlington. With my lips. I did a darling with my lips.
So this enabled them. I had to think about this for a while. Like, what's the point of this? Well, they could say, well, I'm technically married, so I can still go to the public games. There are no penalties. I still get my inheritance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But they aren't actually married, So they don't have to worry about having kids because they're marrying an infant. They don't have to. They can still live it up. They can party, and they right. can always break it off. Like 18 years later, before they have to do something about it, they can go, "Oh, I changed my mind. I'll marry another baby. Got another 18 years." and it's unlikely that. Is it adultery if you're fucking someone else when you're betrothed? Probably. So anyway,
well, it's better to screw someone consensually than to screw your wife who's a baby. So I think it's a good call.
Augustus modified the legislation so that you had to have the wedding within 2 years of the engagement, the betrothal.
Smart.
Good thing that Tiberius and Drusus were already married to their infant brides by this stage.
Right. But I think the point is that, one, this is an unpopular series of legislation. Two, he's tightening it up, getting rid of the loophole. So it's becoming that much more unpopular. And these are Romans, after all. These people generally don't hold back verbally, you know, that kind of stuff. So he is going to feel the pressure as time goes on during this year.
Yeah, I mean... I think the elite are going to be grumbling about it. The masses, right. I'm not sure if they're going to care that much.
Give a shit, yeah.
They might, some of them might do, but by and large, I think a lot of them just went along with it. May have even thought it was a good thing. Yeah, like, he's making Rome great again. We're getting back to the old ways of morality. Although right. this new licentiousness that has crept in the last 10 or 20 years, we're getting back to the good old days. Now, individual cases of breaking these laws were brought to him for arbitration because he loved nothing better than hearing stories about people fucking. And he's like, no, you bring those stories to me, man. I'm going to put my hand under my toga. Don't worry about what's going on.
No, keep talking. Talking.
Talk more slowly. More slowly.
Tell me. Describe it more. Yeah. Describe. Right. Yes.
I've been married to Olivia for 20 years, man. Like, I need... And she goes with me everywhere. She won't let me out of her sight. I need...
I'm the man. Yeah. I'm the man.
One man was accused of marrying a woman with whom he'd previously had an adulterous affair. And they were like, well, come on, Augustus, you know what that's like. Livia was married when you were fucking her. And then, you know, you married her. It's all good. And Augustus actually dismissed the case and said, look, let's forget about what happened in the past. The past is the past. Let's not worry about what happened. Let's just look to the future. Let's not worry about who fucked who and who was married to whom in the past. It's all water under the bridge. I don't have a TARDIS. I can't go back and fix things that happened in the past.
I can't go back and unfuck all those married women. Let's just move on. Nothing to see here.
Speaking of fucking things in a TARDIS, as you probably heard, the new doctor is a woman. Yeah. Very, very, very attractive woman. Which means I can finally masturbate to the doctor without feeling weird. I'm very pleased about the decision that we have a female doctor.
It's just going to make it easier.
Yeah, I don't have to hide my shame any longer. Now,
well,
in 17 BCE, Augustus is 45, 46, the same age I am now.
Very mature.
Oh, my God, what have I done with my life? He's the princeps. I'm doing podcasts with a midget. Really? What?
Masturbating to a female Doctor Who. He has conquered the known world, and you're talking about a guy who conquered the known world. Same thing.
Yeah, not really. How disappointed I am in myself with how little I have achieved in my life. Anywho, as I think you pointed out at the end of the last episode, he's more mature, he's less angry, less clumsy than he had been in his 20s. He's okay with being taunted. He can deal with being interrupted. As I said earlier, he owns and controls everything that matters.
Right.
There's no point in being petty. You can take the piss out of him because, as we all know,
he's got to be the king.
Yeah.
Yeah, have your little fun. Yeah.
Yeah. But. Yeah, have your little fun. I'm still going back to the Palatine, my mansion on the Palatine at the end of this, and I'm going to take a bath in my gold coins, so my gold denarii. So have your fun.
Women want to be with me. Men want to be me. That won't change. Have your little jokes. However, the steel, the killer, is still there inside. Because why? He's a vampire like his father.
Yeah, and you don't want to piss him off too much. As his old friend Vettius Pollio discovered one night.
Oh. Now I was surprised because he's one of the older generation of Cicero's generation. He was, from what we can tell, he's there from the beginning when this 17-year-old or whatever decided to throw his hat into the ring when, you know, against the advice of his parents or whatever, when Caesar's killed. So this guy has been around with him for a long time. This guy has supported him probably financially, but that doesn't change the fact that now that Augustus has remade Rome in his own image, if you will, there are certain things that you can no longer do because it is beneath the dignity of someone in the senatorial class.
And Pollio was known for his love of luxury and cruelty. He sounds like your classic psychopath. He'd once been the governor of Asia, and he owned a massive villa on the Gulf of Naples at a place called Posillipo. The poet Ovid later described this villa as being like a city.
Damn.
He appears in Cicero's letters as a friend of Pompey, the great, P. Diddy.
Mm-hmm.
And in his villa, he had extensive ornamental fish ponds, as you do. I mean, in my villas, I always have ornamental fish ponds. So I consider it absolutely de rigueur. And one of them was filled with carnivorous lampreys.
Damn. Now, I did read a lot about them. They are like a funnel. They have a funnel-like sucking mouth. Let's see here. They bore into the side of the flesh of other fish to suck out their blood. So, obviously, these things have teeth. They don't have jaws, but somehow they have teeth, or they have, the ability to suck through very powerfully, obviously causing damage. And so if you were to trip and fall into one of these, this particular pond, it would go very bad for you.
Of course, what people didn't talk about is what Pollio used to do was have the teeth removed from one of them, and he kept it in a little tank beside the bed.
No, not so hard. He's back. He's right there.
Yes, my baby. Oh my yes, my girl. Actually, that might have been Lucius Licinius Crassus, as I'll talk about later.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, he had these carnivorous lampreys at a pool. So he used to feed slaves to them. If the slaves displeased him, he would push them into a pond full of flesh-eating, blood-sucking fish.
That's fucked up.
So anyway, Augustus is over having dinner with Pollio one night at Pollio's villa. During the meal, a slave accidentally broke a cup that was very expensive from a set of expensive drinking cups, and Pollio ordered him to be thrown to the lampreys. Centurion, throw him to the lampway. The what, sir? The lampway. The what? Lampway? Lampway! Lampway, Centurion! Are you mocking me, Centurion? Augustus ordered one of his own attendants to smash the rest of the cups one by one.
Damn.
Until the slave was freed. I love this story, man.
Yeah.
Augustus It's like, oh, look, dude, you know, I love just, you know, I've had people killed in my time. I've done some crazy shit. Let's, you know, let's not pretend here. I had prescriptions, but come on. Like, there's a line between between being cruel for a reason and just being cruel because you're a cunt. I mean, really?
Right.
Like,
capital C.
I'm here. Like, I'm the princess. I'm here at dinner at your house. You can't be doing that kind of shit. Like, right. What you do with a toothless lamprey on your knob at night, that's your own business. I'm not asking. What happens in the privacy of your own bedroom? None of my business. I would
if
like
you
to
put a wig on it. I don't care if you put lipstick around it. Again, not my business.
You can call it your mother. Yes, mother. I do want to borrow it for a while, but, you know, I'm not judging.
Yeah, no judgment here.
You can't be doing that kind of shit to a slave, particularly while I am in your house. When Pollio died a few years later, he bequeathed his villa to Augustus. The Lamprey Villa. And what did Augustus do, Ray?
Stone by stone, he had it taken down.
Oh!
Wiping this man from, I guess, the city of Rome.
Yeah. He wanted to make sure that Pollio's name was forgotten to history. But here we are talking about him 2,035 years later. But anyway.
Still, people got the message.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, it reminds me of another Lamprey story that I hinted at before. Plutarch tells the story of Lucius Licinius Crassus, the famous orator, teacher of Cicero.
Right.
Who was mocked by Gnaeus Domitius Ahenobarbus for weeping over the death of his pet lamprey. This is from Plutarch. Says, so when Domitius said to Crassus the orator, did you not weep for the death of the lamprey you kept in your fish pond? Did not you, said Crassus to him, bury three wives without ever shedding a tear? Boom!
Oh, snap.
Mic drop, bitches! And then Domitius said, yes, but my three wives had teeth and your lamprey did not.
Who was the luckier man? No, but think about it. I mean, we all know.
I kept asking them if I could have their teeth removed and they said no. So I had to kill them and get another one. Yeah, sorry.
I had to bear the brunt of it. Yeah, no, but if you think about it, I mean, everything that we've talked about in this series, when you are the paterfamilias, you are basically a god in your family line, your family branch. This guy is very wealthy. He's very powerful. He has absolute dominance in his household. And here's his guest in his house, snapping his fingers, having one of his men smash the rest of his cups until the slave is released. And at no point do you get the sense that Augustus was worried that this guy was going to fly off the handle and try and stab him or kill him or whatever. I mean, Augustus is in complete control. It doesn't matter where he is at within the empire. And again, it just shows his complete dominance of the political and literal situation that is the Roman Empire.
To an early grave.
fucking awesome is that groove, man?
I love that.
That's the Bad Loves. I think they're a Bad Loves slave Melbourne band, I think, from the mid-90s.
Nice.
Fucking great album. Check that album out. The Holy Roadside, or just Holy Roadside is the album. Bad Loves, 1995. Great fucking band. Didn't last very long, I think. But had some really great tracks.
Well, the Lampreys are going to go the distance. I got a feeling.
Yeah, that would be a fucking great name for a band, I got to say. So people could criticize Augustus to a point. There's still no force that can really oppose him at this point in time, and everyone knew it. There is now only Augustus. There is no Cicero of this age. There's no Clodius. That's who we were thinking about before.
Clodius.
Clodius. There's no Milo. There's no Pompey. There's no Cato. There's no Sulla. No Marius. No Gracchi brothers.
There's no opposition to rally around.
There's Horace. He's a poet, but he fucking loves Augustus. There was Virgil, but he's dead, and he loved Augustus. So there is no one. There is no snarky political opposition out there. There's no one with an army stamping their foot. There's no one like Cato or Cicero attempting to be the moral core of Rome. There is just Augustus and his inner circle. There's Agrippa. I mean, if Agrippa wanted to stand up to him, that could have been a showdown.
And
there was Maecenas and there was Taurus, and but they're all his inner circle. They were his Augustus and his best friends, the super team, the super friends. That's all there was. Teen Titans. But it's interesting, just when you go back to those names, you think about those Caesar series, full of these fucking larger-than-life characters from the Gracchi onwards, trying to do big things, sometimes for the good, sometimes for the bad. Big, big, big fucking names that were around for 70, 80, 100 years before the age of Augustus. And after Antony's gone... Sorry, I did that thing with my teeth again. It's just Augustus. There really is no one else worth mentioning in Rome at this time.
Yeah, there's a lot of senatorial sheep. There are a few wolves, but they are all in the same pack, supporting Augustus, the head wolf. And you made a good point earlier when Caesar was around, the Caesar, Cato was trying to grab the moral high ground, the moral center. But just from what we've described in this episode and the end of the last episode, Augustus, more than anybody else, has made morality his rallying call, to the point where it's starting to piss off everybody else. So again, even that is not open to any kind of potential opposition. He is saying, everything I do for Rome. Look what I've done. I'm thinking about the future. I've adopted these kids. And now I'm trying to take us back to what made Rome great. Now, you and I know, and we're going to probably get into this soon, even though all of his language is about the Rome in the past, Rome in the past, Rome in the past, everything he's doing is about the present and the future. So it's a disconnect there, but he has left nothing open for any kind of potential opposition. That is power. That is shrewdness. That is Machiavellian. And that is something that his adopted father, Caesar, could not do or did not do.
And it happened so quickly, like within one generation.
Boom.
Rome has gone from being a vicious battle between a vibrant and dysfunctional elite.
Right.
To just one man and his friends.
One
within,
man standing.
Within one generation. I mean, I cannot emphasize that enough. The more I think about it, it's astounding. It's like the fact that this can happen in a culture so quickly, almost overnight, to go from a culture where you had everyone from Crassus and Caesar and Pompey and Cicero and all these fucking guys, For several generations, going back, as I said, to the Gracchi brothers, sort of, when were they, like 110 BCE, through Sulla and Pompey. And then you've got, after Caesar and Cicero, and then within a generation, you've got nothing. Silence, crickets. And yeah, think about that from a modern context. Think about that. It would be like, if a generation from now, by the time our kids are our age, the United States is just Trump and his friends. There is no Bernie Sanders. There's no Elizabeth Warren. There's no Noam Chomsky. There's no Glenn Greenwald. There's no Jeremy Scahill. There's no Julian Assange. There's just Trump and Trump's inner circle. Just patting him on the back. Trump holding cabinet meetings every day going, all right, everybody tell me how much you think I'm fantastic. That's more Vito Corleone.
And outdo each other. The next person has to do better than the other person. Or I'm going to throw you to the fish pond.
To the lampreys.
That's right. Not the band. The pond.
But it happened like in one generation. That blows my mind every time I think about that, just how that entire that entire section of critical political thinkers, outspoken criticism of the leadership of Rome was surgically removed. Partly by Caesar and Pompey and their civil war, and then partly by Antony and Augustus and Lepidus after the prescriptions, and then, you know, the further civil wars, and then, you know, just Augustus centralizing power around himself for the next 20 years.
I think another way to look at it is a series of civil wars, a series of shitstorms that were so intense, it took all the major players down, all the giants down, except for one, Augustus. And he started out as a 17-year-old kid. Yeah, part of it's luck, part of it's obviously circumstances beyond his control. But again, he had to make a series, in a very long line, a series of decisions, one built upon another, and somehow he has come through the entire thing that has taken down men that were better than him. They were better fighters, or they were better generals, or whatever. Maybe they had more money or whatever, but he is the one left standing. Instead of just sitting on his laurels, resting on his laurels, he has, like you said, surrounded, made everything about him. All power runs through him. His family and the state are now practically the same thing. So when he's preserving the state, he is preserving his family, and he's expanding that family through adoptions, and he is thinking about 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years to come, because that's what solid leaders do.
I just wonder if anyone could have foreseen this. Imagine anyone sitting in Rome in 50 BCE, the year before Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon. If they had said, you know what, I reckon within 30 years, there's just going to be one man and his friends in control of Rome. No one.
Yeah, could, like, no fucking way. No
fuck
way.
Fuck you. The Republic's been around for 500 years. Yeah. There's no. What the. You got to stop smoking that meth, man. That it's not good for you. Your teeth are falling out. Imagine if you'd said, maybe we went back in the TARDIS to 50 and we said, hey, listen, within 30 years, there's going to be one guy. Really? Who is he? You know, you've never heard of him, honestly. He's only 13 years old right now. He's a fucking nobody from fucking nowhere.
His balls haven't dropped yet.
He is not only going to be in control of pretty much all of the money and all of the military, he'll have control of the Senate, he'll tell them what to do, and they'll say, yes, sir, how high, when he tells them to jump. And not only this, here's the fucking clincher, not only does he control everything, everyone thanks him for it. Everyone loves him.
They love
him. They fucking love him. And he can walk around the streets without a bodyguard. No one tries to attack him. No one tries to kill him. They just keep giving him more and more honors. They give him more and more power. He can make laws just by snapping his fingers. It doesn't have to go through the Senate. Doesn't have to get voted on.
Right.
He doesn't have to be surrounded by a bodyguard. He doesn't have to rule Rome with violence.
Right. And for many years, people feared him actually dying or being killed because it would have ruined everything. They feared, they prayed for his safety and for his health. How fucking incredible is that?
No, I doubt that anyone, not even a Cicero or a Cato, could have, in their wildest imagination, foreseen this version of the future. And it's worth, like, I just want everyone to just stop and think about what has, because we've, you know, we drone on and on and on for fucking hundreds of hours talking about this thing, and it seems like it's taken forever. And if you think this has taken a long time, you should listen to our Yalta conference episodes. But this is like the fucking Civil War. Caesar was assassinated in what, 44?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about 17, so that's not even 30 years. It's
right.
26 years later.
Right.
Is my math good on that? 44 minus 17. 27 years. And I mean, it's been this way for a long time. I mean, Augustus had power for since Actium, really, 31. But here we are. 26, 27 years, like half a generation has gone by, really. And we've gone from vibrant Rome to one man in control of everything and being thanked for it. Like, this is mind-blowing to me. Imagine if Trump had control of all of the money and all of the power, could make wills just by snapping his fingers, and everyone was like, oh, thank you so much. Like, fucking thank God for Trump, really.
Yeah, thank God. Well, another way to think of it is if you went back to 50 BC, you grabbed a person, you put them in your TARDIS, and then you took them to 17 BC, they would not recognize, like, what are all these statues of this guy? Who in the hell is this guy? I recognize the Caesar part of his name, but what's this Augustus thing? I mean, there's statues, there's a plaques, there's things like that. I mean, they would not be able to, they would think they were on a parallel planet or something.
He's being worshipped as a god and the son of a god, a Roman. Yeah. What?
That's bullshit. That's blasphemy.
So, and we have to ask, right? Like, how much of this turnaround is the result of the horror of the civil wars? And how much of it is the result of Augustus's strategic, Augustus and Agrippa and Maecenas and these guys, their strategic thinking, they're playing the way they've engineered this. I tend to think it's probably 50-50.
Right, that's what I was going to say. You remove the opponents is one thing, but if you can still die, you can still fuck it up, you can still get caught up in the same shitstorm that they got caught up. I mean, statistically, or percentage-wise, he shouldn't have made it this far. So having your enemies removed is one thing, but that doesn't guarantee success. But he and Team Caesar were able to make it happen very impressively, very gradually. And like you said, people are thanking them for it. I mean, that is power.
Well, I wasn't thinking of it as much as just removing their enemies, although that's part of it, but just the horrors of civil war. No one wants to go back to that. No one. Everyone's happy for the peace and the stability and the prosperity. But it's also the way that they've handled this. Like, he has been, after the prescriptions are done with, and, you know, after Antony's gone, you know, and he's got firm control, he's been deliberately measured. He's not brutal. There's not blood. He's not beheading people, his enemies, like a Sulla would have done, or even a Marius, or even probably a Pompey. He's been very, very disciplined, very measured, very not ostentatious. Okay, yes, he built a palace and that kind of stuff, but he's making sure everyone's looked after. He and Agrippa, you know, making Rome great again, building up the infrastructure, doing all this kind of stuff. They've really deliberately tried to solidify their power on making sure the people are looked after, even the elite feel like they have a career path. Yes, you're not going to be Augustus, but you can still be consul. You can still get money and fame and renown for your family, and you can still have a career. You're not going to. It's not going to be like it was in the old days, but it's the next best thing. Maybe even in some ways better than the old days, because you're probably not going to end up with your head on a spike, because there's another civil war just around the corner. You give a little, you take a little. There's some trade-offs. I don't know. It's just, this is why Augustus is a legitimate fucking genius, man. Like, when you think about what he pulled off with, again, can't overstate this, the help of his inner circle, Agrippa and Maecenas, what he has accomplished here.
Yeah.
When you stand back and you look at it in that 30-year perspective, it's astounding.
Yeah, it's like winning the lottery 15 times in a row. It just doesn't happen. He has defied the odds. And the greatest example of that, we said earlier, when he comes back from the East and he is given the Lex Julia, you can make any law you want. You don't have to run it by us. You say it, you write it down, boom, it's law. And he goes, no, thank you. But I will go through the proper channel. I will go through the Senate, the representatives of the people of Rome, because that is the proper thing to do. It's bullshit, but the fact that that's his response explains greatly how he was able to get this far.
If you could make any law you wanted, Ray.
Oh, God. I have no idea. What law,
what would you pass?
I have no idea.
Right now, any law. You know, in the United States, 52 states. Is it still 52? Have you added 50. Any recently? 50.
No, 50. And some territory.
Oh, right. Yeah. What about Iraq? You don't consider that a state yet? Okay.
it's a territory.
Oh, okay. My mistake. Yeah. What law would you pass? One law.
This
big
is gonna
or
sound...
as little as you like.
Yeah, no, I can't come up with anything silly.
Come on! Not silly, serious. Serious law.
Yeah, no. Universal health coverage.
Yeah, it's a good law. Yeah.
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 What about you? Besides statues of you.
We already have universal health coverage. The rest of the world has it.
Yeah. It's embarrassing. It is embarrassing. The rest of the world, the industrialized nations, have figured it out. We can't come up with a single payer system. It's embarrassing because it's just so pathetic. But anyway, I digress.
Stopping you quitting your job.
It is. It's all about me.
It's all about you, yeah.
It is.
If I could pass one law for Australia, what would it be? Oh, I know. Yeah. This has been a pet thing of mine for a long, long time. I want a law passed where every political candidate before an election needs to sit a lie detector test.
Ah.
To ask them about their policies, their connections with corporations and their agendas and all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I know that lie detector tests aren't necessarily conclusive, but they get used by law enforcement, so they're an indication. But it doesn't matter. I just want them to sit it and for the results to be given to the public. Right. The second part of the law is if... Before your election, when you're campaigning, you have to make promises about what you're going to do. Promises.
Right.
If you get elected. If you get elected and you don't keep those promises, and I don't care what your fucking justifications and your reasons are, if you don't keep those promises,
right,
automatic jail term, 5 years.
Because you're a liar.
No, I just think it will make them be a lot more fucking careful about what promises they make before a campaign.
More realistic, yeah. Absolutely.
If you go, I'm going to build a wall, or I'm going to repeal Obamacare, and then you get in and you don't repeal Obamacare, I don't care what your excuses are, motherfucker. You said you're going to do it, you didn't do it, boom, in jail. Tell it to the other inmates. I don't care. Shouldn't have promised it if you couldn't deliver it.
Well, since we've gone off on a tangent, did you hear today about Trump banning transgenders from serving in the military?
Yeah, I got into a big... When I couldn't sleep last night, I got into a big fucking debate with people on Facebook about that.
Well, I heard, you know, he did it in a series of three tweets, and there was a 10-minute gap between the first and the second tweet, which makes no sense. But he said, according to my generals, I should do this. And the Pentagon came out and said, we had no idea this announcement was coming. So I don't know what generals he was fucking talking to, but it wasn't any of the ones in the military. So again, just another embarrassing moment.
The 10-minute gap was him wiping his ass.
Because he was on the toilet.
Yeah. We all know that's when he tweets.
From now on, you will not be able to... Oh, hold on. Okay. Roll. Wipe ass. Okay.
Next
don't roll. Even wash your hands.
Yeah. B-day.
Anyway.
Yeah, I retweeted something Julian Assange tweeted last night, which was, look, this is just political theater. It's distraction. It's classic Trump. The entire media and all of the left are all got their knickers in a knot over it. And it'll just tie up a few days or a week of outrage.
And then he comes up with something else.
Yeah, then he'll do something else. He'll go, okay, we're not doing that. But now I'm going after the leprechauns. Oh, leprechauns can't fucking fight in the military. It's what got him elected. It's and I've written about this in my book. It's bright, shiny object. That's literally... what it's called by people in the political spectrum. It's the bright, shiny object strategy. Every day he throws up a new bright, shiny object that people focus on, get their fucking knickers in a twist over it, and then a few days later he throws out another one, says something else outrageous, and everyone gets all fucking righteous about it. And it just keeps people distracted.
But it makes them look stupid, or it confirms how... ignorant he is of so many norms. Yeah. I mean, because
he won.
He's to pay the price. That's true.
He sitting in the Oval won. Office you can sit there and talk about how dumb he is till the cows come home, but he fucking won the election. And don't tell me Hillary got 3 million more votes. Doesn't matter. A bunch of those people only voted for Hillary because they were horrified about the alternative. B, he still won. So
yeah.
He won, it worked for him, and it's not 4D chess. People were getting stuck at me on Facebook last night going, oh, this is the whole 4D chess. No, I'm not saying it's 4D chess. I'm not saying that it's that. It doesn't have to be that smart to play 4D chess. All he needs to do is distract your dumb asses. My analogy is it's the same as McCarthyism during the height of the Cold War, which we've talked about in the other show. It's, fucking, this guy's a commie sympathizer or this or that, or the commies are coming, and it's just keeping people outraged or terrified or distracted while you are raping the economy in the background.
Right.
And yes, these are all outrageous things. I'm not saying that, you know, going after transgender people's not a horrendous thing to do, although I will say, we're so far off the track now, but... I mean, really, if you're on the left and you're fighting to have more people in the military, really, is that what the left should be wasting their time fighting about? If Trump is making decisions or going to pass laws that's going to reduce the amount of people in the U.S. military, I say that's a good thing. You want to decrease your military budget, not increase it, so you're fighting for the wrong reasons. But anyway, yes, but picking on minorities is... fucking evil, but that's not the point. He's doing it deliberately so you'll get your knickers in a twist and take your eye off the ball. You're playing the player, not the ball, not the puck, was what I said on Facebook last night. And somebody asked, what's the ball? And the ball is your political system's broken. That's the ball. It's a corporatocracy. It's an oligarchy. Both sides, Dems and the Republicans, it's all run by big money with fucked up candidates. Leaving aside Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, who are, you know, sort of fringe candidates trying to reinvent the Democrats. But most of the players, you know, your Wassermann Schultz, your Clintons, these are all big money, fucking big corporate, Goldman Sachs fucking puppets. They're the people that are running both sides of your major parties, and the system's broken. And while you're getting all your knickers in a twist over this outrageous tweet or that outrageous tweet, you're not fixing the reason you have Trump as a president in the first place is because your political system is fundamentally fucked. And that's the reason you don't have healthcare like the rest of the world is, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just, anyway. Yeah. Stop fucking playing the player and play the ball, motherfuckers.
Play with your balls, people. No, that's not right. Play the ball.
Cock and balls.
Now, the reason we went into this tangent, which was completely planned, it wasn't spontaneous or random.
4D chess podcasting.
is because Augustus had his own version of distracting the masses, and that was the theater.
Yeah, but let's leave that to the next episode, man.
Okay, we are leaving the theater to the next episode.
Yes. Next episode, we got theater and we've got war coming war. Up.
What is it good for? Entertainment.
Yeah. Got another review I want to read out before we go. Right. This is from España.
Mm-hmm. Is that the name of the person or the country they're from?
The country, Spain. Okay. Catalan RL Rules is the name of the writer here. Right. It's a short review, but it's 5 stars and it's from Spain, so I thought I'd give him a shout out.
Kick ass.
Can you beat Pula Sula? I like their other work separately on Napoleon and WW2, but this is a great clash. The two combine in recounting the life of Caesar and now his successor Augustus. Really fun, a bit rude, occasionally offensive to some, but chock full of factual stuff. Get on it. Thank you, Catalan RL Rules. Shoot us an email, arve@lifeofcaesar.com. We'll shoot you a thank you gift all the way to Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're anywhere near Barcelona, go and hook up with our friend, the composer Jofre Orda Antonio. By the way, for those of you who don't know, Jofre gave us the music for the themes for the Augustus show and for the Cold mm-hmm. War show. Alexander show, the Cold War show.
Right.
And he's also composing an original piece of music for my Christianity documentary. Very nice. Talented. But he's also a fucking martial arts badass. Follow him on Facebook. He posted a thing the other day of him doing a fucking high kick. He's a Taekwondo black belt, as well as a composer mm-hmm. and lover and a cat man. Posting this thing of him doing a high kick, like a flying high kick, slow motion. Fucking perfect form, man. Perfect. Did you see it? Do you follow him?
Yeah.
You saw that high kick?
Yeah.
Holy shit. I was super impressed. So,
Yeah,
check him out. Jofre Horta Antonia. Thank you, Catalan RL Rules. We are motherfucking out, yo. What you try?